This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Fender Bender on Joy 94.9, revving up the weekends with news and views on all things motoring.
That is exactly right. Like the man said, this is Fender Bender on Saturday afternoon. You're on Joy 94.9 and my name is Daniel Gardner. We've got another hour of all things automotive coming up for you on just about the gayest station in the nation, possibly the world. I will be joined by two very special people in the studio. We'll be talking about all things international and national news and also some very interesting cars we've been driving lately. You may have spotted the deliberate mistake there. This is not Tim Nicholson. He is at large somewhere. I don't know what he's up to, so I'll be holding the fort this week. And we are going to be talking all things cars. This is Fender Bender. This is the car show on Joy 94.9. But you won't be sitting there listening to me just talk to myself for the next hour. I'd be willing to do that. I'll be completely honest. I feel I can fill an hour of absolute nonsense. But I won't have to because I'm joined in the studio by somewhat of a regular on Fender Bender, the lovely Mark Costello. How are you, sir?
I'm good. And I don't have the luxury of a semi suave British accent like you do, so maybe an hour in an echo chamber of just yourself would be more palatable to the listeners. I'm not quite sure.
Stop it. I'm not going to test the theory. It's very nice of you, but I'd prefer if we could have some kind of dialogue. That would be great. And now then, we've privileged to be joined in the studio by a personality not unknown to Fender Bender. In fact, may I say, perhaps one of the old favourites, Jeremy.
Am I a favourite?
Welcome back.
Thank you, Dan. You always make me feel funny when you're hosting the show because you look at me like you're talking only to me.
What? I think, how else should I do it?
I don't know. Look at the floor.
No. That would just be weird. It's like when you get told off, you look at the floor, don't you? You get all sort of self-conscious and a bit weird.
Yeah, well, you're making me feel weird.
Okay, well, I'm sorry about that. I will do everything
I can. No, it's okay. I really like it. Actually, you look wonderful today because I have to say, before I came on here, I had two separate people ask me what I was doing. And when I mentioned that I was on the show with you, they're like, oh, with Hot Dan. And two people that you wouldn't even know. And I don't know how they know you and know your face because your face is nowhere. But
My face is nowhere,
That was the ultimate backhanded compliment.
That's not very nice. Do you mean like my face isn't in the public arena?
Yeah, well, it's not. You don't
it's just my
do
voice.
The social medias. Yeah.
Well, I'm very happy to carry the mantle of Hot Dan.
That's it. Hot Dan. In full stop. That was it. So
we are here to talk about cars, not necessarily my face or voice, although that also is fine with me. Mm. Now, we haven't seen you for a little while, Jeremy, and a little bit later in the show, we're going to talk to you about why we haven't seen you. You've been up to very good things, but don't give it away just yet. We'd like to talk to you a little bit about that later. In the meantime, if you'd like to talk to us, you can get in touch, 0427JOY949. That's the text line. Let us know your motoring escapades, or you can email onair@joy.org.au. We promise to read out... Well, I'll read out all the messages. Normally I screen them, you know, but I'm feeling generous today. I'm just going to read out everything you send in.
Normally the ones that you have to screen are ones that don't have any text in them anyway. So
yeah, true. Those we just post on the Facebook
totally
page. We are here to talk about cars, and we're going to kick off with a little bit of news. Let's start local. Now, Hyundai, very popular brand in Australia. Jeremy, you have dealings with Hyundai as well.
I do, yes.
And just last week, or at the end of last month, there was a little bit of bad news for Hyundai. There was a huge storm in Sydney, and their very new main parts distribution centre collapsed under about 20 centimetres of hail. Whole thing gone. Written off the whole lot. $2.5 million worth of parts. Now, has this caused a bit of a strife for you?
Totally. But it's not just Hyundai, it's Kia.
The
sister or brother, whatever you want to call it. But yeah, it's completely stopped all parts nationwide. And so everything's coming out of Korea again. They've put a big order in, which I would have thought would be here by now, which, because it happened, 2 weeks ago, Dan?
Anzac weekend.
Right. So, yeah, you would have thought that if they're coming out on plane, that it would all be here by now, but it's not. So you'd have to say they've stuck it on a ship. But that's a lot of parts to put the whole nationwide.
Be too much for a plane.
Yeah, everybody's kind of swapping between retail centres at the moment.
So if your Hyundai has broken down in the past few weeks, or your Kia, you just can't get it fixed, is that
yeah,
right?
Yeah, basically.
Well, you have to sit there without a car.
I spoke to Hyundai, and they said that they believe that the stock they've got in dealerships around the country should just about carry them over until the new stuff
arrives.
Unless
you have, like, a really obscure problem or something.
Yeah. Which it has been so far. The only ones, is the obscure ones. So something comes in that's got...
And they know a majority of the cases that are going to come up, and those are the parts that are coming on planes, the really urgent stuff. Otherwise, it's all on boats. Apparently, 170 containers arriving beginning of next week of new stock. So, yes, it's a big problem, and their contingency plan apparently is taking good care of it. On other local news, we're all familiar with the phenomenon which is Uber, are we?
Uber's...
I know a little bit about it.
It's kind of one of those things that... I don't know, it seems like only 6 months ago that it was a fringe thing. Uber was this mystical fringe company. And now it's ubiquitous. Everyone I know has used it. Not everybody uses it again. I mean, a lot of people love it. But yeah, it's just completely ubiquitous. It feels like it's bigger than taxis.
So it's something where someone can sign up who has a car and they're just a...
Yeah.
They're not a licensed taxi driver.
They have
outside, isn't it?
Yeah, they have to fulfill certain requirements, like the age of the car. It has to be not older than, I can't remember how many years. And there's one or two other requirements. But what Uber have now done...
Yeah, you have to have a clear license.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
No
yeah.
infringements.
What Uber has now done is they've introduced a new service called Uber Assist, which apparently, and they're marketing this as being able to help disabled and mobility compromised passengers. Now, the Australian Taxi Industry Association has come to this saying that it's misleading, because if a licensed taxi says they can pick up someone in a wheelchair, they can accommodate all wheelchairs. Whereas what Uber is not saying is they can only deal with fold-up stuff.
See, here's the thing, though. I've read that Uber press release. I reckon the taxi organisation's been a bit misleading here, because I reckon Uber does say it. I remember reading Uber's press release and walking away with a pretty clear... in my mind, indication that they're not doing the full whack service. And the taxi industry has been getting increasingly rigorous in its criticisms of Uber. And the only reason I can think of for that is because Uber's stealing its business and doing a good job of it. There's a protest we saw recently in Perth. The taxi industry is getting pretty up in arms because, frankly, you know, some people out there, and I won't speak for everyone, but some people are having better experiences with Uber. There are areas that Uber seems to be doing things better. So I wonder whether this is just a reaction from a taxi industry that's getting a little desperate.
I wonder. Yeah, it could possibly be. They're certainly worrying them with their business.
Have you used Uber out there as a listener?
Yeah, absolutely.
Let us know.
I'm interested.
0427JOY949 is the text, or you can email onair@joy.org.au. Yeah, let us know your experiences with Uber, because they've been in the news for other less desirable reasons recently as well. Let us know. Sticking with the local news, we have lost two models from the Australian range this week. Are we particularly sad about this, boys?
One I'm sad about.
Which one?
The Honda Civic Diesel.
Yeah, okay, why?
So about a week ago, Honda finally introduced in Australia the updated UK-built Civic. Honda Civic's a pretty famous name in Australia. Everybody has a Honda Civic story of some sort. It's like a Corolla. But lately, it's been struggling terribly because they get the hatch out of the UK, and the exchange rate makes it really expensive. There are other newer cars out there. Long story short, it's not selling. They did the update, they're hoping for better things, but they had this diesel in the previous one that was really great, but being a European diesel, it's only got a manual gearbox.
Right.
And we don't like manuals in Australia traditionally. So they couldn't sell any, and so they just dropped it. But it was really sad because that diesel Civic was a really underrated car.
I drove that and I thought exactly the same.
They sold like 7 in the entire time it was on sale here. 3% of Civic sales were diesels, which shows, I mean, diesel passenger cars in general are actually down 30% this year. So nobody's buying diesel cars in the passenger segment anymore, unless you're talking big SUVs and things. But it is a shame because it was a cool car.
That was a great car. And manuals are good fun as well, but you just can't sell them to Australians, it seems. Now, the other car that we've lost from the Australian range, we're less sad about this. Sorry about this, Renault, but your Fluence is gone, and I don't think anyone will be mourning it particularly badly.
The Fluence.
Oh, sorry. Yes, correct pronunciation. Very good.
Oui.
Fluence.
Yeah, a bit of a...
Yeah.
I don't know.
No, look, it's a small sedan that don't typically do very well in Australia, particularly in any brand, let alone, Renault is rising in its...
It's interesting, that car is actually a Samsung, because in Korea, Samsung make cars.
Really?
They have a deal with Renault, so the company that makes the Galaxy phone, that TV that you've probably got in your living room, makes cars and earth-moving equipment and all sorts of stuff.
Is it like Sunbeam? They used to make toasters and cars.
Sunbeam, yeah.
Well, I like being able to buy, all of my white goods from a car maker.
Yeah. Whatever happened to Sunbeam cars?
I don't know.
They brought back... There's a few brands that have been brought back recently. Borgward's come back.
Yes.
Maybe Sunbeam will come back.
Well, let's just keep our fingers crossed, It's not as if we haven't got enough choice on the Australian market. What is it? 60 brands now, I think, or 50-something?
Yeah, it's nuts.
So there you go. Two casualties of the Australian car industry there. Not a lot of mourning for either. We will be back very shortly. We've got more news to discuss, both local and international. It's a bit of a grisly afternoon. So Just stay warm with us in the studio. It's pretty. It's actually a bit gamey in here, isn't it, boys?
Yeah, I don't mind that, though.
Sorry. No,
that.
You wouldn't.
I can smell you from here.
Oh, it's like a badger set. It's great.
Can you say motor?
Motor. Or do you want it in the Somerset accent?
Yeah.
Motor.
Oh, no, not that one.
No, you don't
motor.
Like... Oh, motor, like, wait, oh, like London? London, motor.
Mm. Yeah.
You got it. Right. I'm just a one-man act here.
Anyway, man. Just moving on. Just wanted to hear that.
You are joined by Jeremy, Mike and Dan in the Joy 94.9 studios. This is Fender Bender. We're discussing all things local and international news. Before the break, we were talking about two casualties of the Australian car industry. Now we're going to talk about another casualty, but not just yet. The final Commodore, Holden Commodore, has been spied testing, and it's revealing a couple of secrets. Now, this is an important car for sort of bittersweet reasons. It's probably the best the Commodore's ever been, but the facelifted one, which is currently testing secretly at the Holden Proving Ground, is going to be the last. But we're going to get a facelift before it goes. Now, what the spy shots have shown is that the very interesting feature, it seems to have adopted these things called venti ports, which is a styling trait that Buick uses. Now, this is interesting because after local production of Holden ceases, Holden are going to obviously be a 100% importer, and these cars are going to have to come from other markets. Buick is one that is probably going to be supplying, because we've now seen on the Commodore, just in front of the A pillar, these little vents, which Buicks have had for decades, and they've just appeared on the last Commodore. So does this mean that we're going to be getting Buicks to replace Holden?
Buick's massive in China. Because Buick is obviously an American part of GM, but it does really, really well in China. And it only focuses on left-hand drive. So it'd be a bit weird if Buick was the brand they chose. I mean, we know Opel's going to supply cars.
Of course.
And we know that Chevy's going to supply cars. But
is that because their production line only caters for left-hand?
Buick? Yeah. I think it's just the way they've been positioned. I mean, if you can do well in China and America, you don't really need to do well anywhere else, you know? So you don't even bother.
Yeah, but you're saying that it would be weird to
choose them because they'd
have to set up a new assembly line or something.
Or to recalibrate their focus just for tiny little Australia. It'd be a bit weird. But it might point to the fact that right now all the trends in motoring, like what Volkswagen Group does, for instance, is all the different various brands are all much more related underneath the same umbrella.
Right.
General Motors has this thing where all its brands are quite different, but it might show that they're all going to get a little bit closer and more related, and they're not going to have so much difference between them. So Chevys and Opel and Buicks and all those might actually be a bit more common as things go on, and that Buick thing might actually go across the range. It's the only way to really do it in the modern age is what everyone else is doing, and if you want to keep up, you kind of have to.
Is that sad? I mean, are we losing a bit of our identity here? I mean, I think obviously we are, but does that trouble anyone?
It seems to always come up whenever I'm on the show, the word Commodore, and I find it very uninspiring. I've never thought they're a particularly good car. They're not very...
God, so unpatriotic. What's the matter with you?
I know.
Now, the latest Commodore is actually really good. I'm not even like a Holden guy or a big Aussie car guy, but it is a good car. Doesn't do much wrong.
Between the Falcon and the Commodore, I reckon the Commodore's definitely got it.
Oh, yeah. Miles better.
They're just the interior's way better quality.
Well, it's because Ford spent about $3.50 redoing the Falcon recently, because that's all it had.
One of the other suggestions is that the new Commodore's going to go to 6.2 litres, up from 6 litres.
Because you really need that extra time.
Which is ridiculous, though.
Yeah, it's funny, isn't it? Well, look, the SS, unusable, which is sold in the US, that already gets to 6.2, which is like the HSV engine. If we get it here, that'll break the magic 300 kilowatt mark for the Commodore. So, you know, quite a nice way to send it out. Anyway, watch this space, because we don't know anything yet. This only in secret testing.
Yeah.
Finally, we'll finish off the news with a little bit of international. This is great. I saw this just this morning. Now, the Lotus Formula One team is sort of known to be the playful one in the series at the moment. You know, they do silly things. They muck around. They're the one. They'll be sitting at the back of the class.
When you're losing every race, you can kind of get away with being funny.
Yeah.
There's no pressure on you. You know, no one expects you to be anywhere other than the back of the grid.
So Lotus have teamed up with the forthcoming Mad Max film, which I'm very excited about because I love Mad Max, and they have made, get this, a Mad Max Formula One car.
How does that work?
Well, you know what, in Mad Max, they turn the cars into these sort of like angry, sort of beaten up but weaponized vehicles to fight it out
the
on
Landau.
The roads. Well, they've done it with the Formula One car. It's amazing. It's got dual rear tires, knobbly tires on it. It's got flamethrowers on the side pods. It's got skulls on the front spoiler. It's all painted in matte black. It looks so mean.
And they use this in the movie?
No, I don't think it is in the movie. Oh. It's just something that Lotus has done to celebrate the fourth.
Do you know what I'd like to see? Like a practical use for that car. The next F1 race, right?
There's a practical
use
for
Yeah, no, absolutely right. The next F1 race, they're all on the starting grid. And as they take off, the Lotus car does a U-turn, turns around, and then drives in the wrong direction on the track. And then when Lewis Hamilton in the lead comes down a corner, he just bang, just
I love this.
And just like Pillion, just takes them all out.
I love this.
And then it turns around and wins the race.
Yeah.
It'd be amazing.
And then
right?
Flame throws and anyone.
Everyone says F1's a bit boring now because the cars sound crap and there's only one team that never wins and, you know, it's a bit dull, right? Well, this is the way that you sex up the sport again.
I like it.
Carnage. Safe carnage, but, yeah. You know.
Will Mel Gibson be driving?
No, I think he's kind of lost the plot, hasn't he?
I think the ship has sailed for Mel Gibson. There's no
shame,
coming
really.
Back for that guy.
Because he was a bit, as we were saying earlier, Jeremy, he was a bit of a babe in the first one.
Yeah, he was. I watched that just last night, actually.
Oh, really?
Yeah, well, just in lead up, in preparation to seeing the new one. So I watched the first one last night.
Okay, I'm excited. I'm going to go and see, I might do that thing when you see it at midnight, the first showing, because I'm that excited about it.
Really?
That. Yeah.
You are a bit nerdy.
You know how, like, for cult films, sometimes people dress up?
Yeah.
Is there going to be, like, people dressing up for the first screening of Mad Max?
I would not normally ever do that, but this is the first film I probably would, because all the costumes are so cool.
Well, you don't look ridiculous, do you? Like, if you're dressing up for some films, you look a bit... You show a part of yourself you might not be particularly proud of.
That's but well no, Gibbs, true.
Sorry, Mad Max, you know, you're looking around, you're walking around in leather
might,
and that. And
I might still be tempted to show a part of myself. I normally wouldn't. Moving on then, Mike, we're going to talk about something you've been driving recently, something that's dear to most petrol heads' hearts. Well, that didn't sound right for a second. That's two anatomical parts in one there, taking the theme on further. You have been in a very exciting car briefly, haven't you? What do you drive?
All manner of exciting cars lately. I had a quick spin during the week in a car that is one that any petrol head would, you know, be pretty excited to drive, the Porsche 911 GT3, which is basically the racing version of that car. I mean, they're all quick. It's a Porsche, so it stands to reason it's going to be fast, but not all of them have, you know, roll cages in them, and not all of them have racing seats with four-point harnesses in them, and it's basically there's no reason why that car should actually be on the road. It is fine on the road, but there's no reason why it really should be. But it's quite an experience to be driving around in a car like that. But I think the more interesting thing of that, because, you know, driving a car like that on a racetrack is in its element, but where it's not probably in its element is driving it down, say, Chapel Street on a busy night.
Is that what you did?
Or down Punt Road in peak hour. Or, well, these things are unavoidable if you're living
in the city.
You're
doing chap laps.
Not
in a 911.
No, but I have to go through Chapel Street to get where I'm going. Or down Punt Road.
Oh, how convenient.
Down some little inner urban roundabout where you've got to take a sharp turn, and this thing's really wide and low and worth more money than you would really want to have in your hands in a situation like that. So I think that's where a car like that gets particularly interesting and vaguely terrifying.
Right. Okay. Well, that's good. I'm pleased you did do a bit of that kind of testing, because that's what Porsche and everyone who's ever owned a 911 says is it's the car that you can live
with
every day.
But this is the one that isn't like that. So a regular 911 is just that's the awesome thing about 911s and Porsches in general, because, you know, you can flick a switch and they become crazy track machines, and then you put it in comfort mode and you just potter around and it's the everyman, everyday supercar. This car is completely uncompromising and doesn't even have any pretense of being anything other. So it's kind of a different look at the way Porsche can calibrate its cars.
Now, Jeremy, you and Mike are in a very exclusive club in that you have driven Porsche 911s. I have never lost my 911 Chery. No, I've driven all manner of. I've driven Ferraris and all other Porsches and Mercedes and Maseratis. Never driven a Porsche 911.
Yeah. I fell in love with it as soon as I drove it. I wasn't a big fan. You know, I wasn't all about Porsche and, you know, never particularly fancied them. But after driving it, totally fell in love.
Really?
Yeah, it was just like the only car I've ever felt like, and it sounds really cheesy, but being part of the car.
Yeah.
And it's the only one out of, you know.
And I was talking to a group of journos recently. They were doing a track comparison of all of those sort of classes of cars. So they had the Lamborghini Huracan there, they had Ferrari, they had all this, and the 911 was there. And they said that the only car that you didn't have to keep pulling into the pits every now and then to let the brakes cool down and let the tyres come back on was the 911. It's rock-hard consistent. It's the only one you can drive like a maniac, and it will just continue to do its job day in, day out.
There was a global media launch where they had one car for the entire stint. Hundreds and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of people driving it around tracks again
and
again.
Isn't that brilliant?
Yeah. That's the key. That's why people often think to themselves, why is like a Nissan GT-R half the price of a Porsche? The GT-R is an amazing car, but I don't know whether it would stand up to things quite as well as the Porsche.
Yeah.
There's that like over-engineering thing that they do, but very few others do.
It's just, it's infallible German logic and engineering. And every time a new car like this comes along, like the classic example at the moment is the Mercedes-AMG GT. Everyone says 911 competitor. You know, every time a car that comes along, they always say, they always benchmark against a 911. And still to this day, no one has been able to take that crown, have they?
No, I don't think so.
Oh, well, maybe I'll keep my fingers crossed and I might jump in one someday. If you're listening, Porsche, I'd love to drive one, by the way. We are going to have a little bit of music in the meantime, but when we come back, we'll be discussing some other things you've driven, Mike. And we're also going to be talking about where Jeremy has been. There's a lot of rumours floating around about where he's been, but we're going to get the truth. That was a bit of Maloko, believe it or not. Bit of a blast from the past. You're on Joy 94.9. My name is Daniel, and you're on Fender Bender, the Automotive Hour.
Can I also say that is the least naff song that you have ever voluntarily played on this?
Don't. Come on, that's a bit harsh.
That was a vaguely passable song.
Thank you. I mean, that's kind of one of those compliments that was wrapped up in an insult.
Or just a straight out insult, really, wasn't it?
All right, okay. Well, someone who
a special taste
is happy. Thank you. All right. Well, I would like to think it's a very Joy 94.9 taste. All right. Just think yourself lucky there's no Venga Boys or Aqua this week, because there could have been. We had a message, I believe, in the break, didn't we, Mike?
We did, from Brad. We were talking earlier about Uber and what we think of Uber and if anybody's used Uber. And Brad says, not used Uber personally and doesn't use cabs on a very regular basis. However, being from a family that ran buses and coaches for about 30 years, I know that part of what the licensing requirements involve is to have highly documented maintenance programs, drivers that have passed police and working with children checks, medical checks, and having a license to carry passengers. Similar requirements are on cabs. And then Brad asks the question, can Uber make the same claims? Honestly, I don't really know. And it's kind of a good point that none of us do know. Maybe that needs to be put out there a little better. My understanding is that the cars have to be to a certain standard with Uber, and that insurance-wise, they're covered by a broadened policy, and that Uber has its own checks and balances that it enacts. But, you know, whether they're as rigid and as structured as the taxi industry, I don't really know. And it is the question, isn't it?
That is the question. That's what's been the criticism all along. You know, how the way that they save you money is by cutting corners. Now, that sounds harsh, but one of the corners they're cutting is by, you know, employing drivers that aren't trained drivers.
But then in other ways, like I haven't been in a taxi lately where the driver was any good. You know, I've seen taxi drivers,
taxi drivers
driving with like one finger or one hand on the wheel. Generally, taxi drivers, to me, aren't paragons of driving ability at all. And, you know, Uber has an app that's fantastic where you just basically book online. You know, in terms of paying, it's maybe safer for drivers because there's no exchange of money. You've paid once you step out of the car automatically. Yeah. So, you know, I think Uber's maybe not doing some things the taxi industry is doing, but it's definitely doing other things that are maybe better than what the taxi industry is doing as well.
Speaking of doing things that might be better, Jeremy. We haven't seen you for a little while, have we?
I know, I've lost track. I don't know when I was last on here, but it was a while.
It has been a while. Yeah.
Jeremy was, of course, one of our original regular co-hosts.
Yeah, I'm an imposter here.
Which is now, how many years ago? You mentioned it before.
It was like four years ago or something. Yeah.
So, we haven't seen you. We used to be a regular on the show. And we haven't seen you for a little while because you've been up to something very wholesome and quite charitable.
Yeah, I guess it is. It's almost a charity. I don't know if I'm allowed to legally use those words because I've had to jump through so many hoops.
I was saying it was a child. I'm doing a favour here.
Yeah.
Tell us what you've been up to.
Yeah, well, look, I've still been in here in the studio a few times. But promoting something a little different. I founded an organisation when I returned from Southeast Asia that aids displaced people, mainly dealing with education on the border of Burma and Thailand. So, yeah, that's been keeping me pretty busy.
That's amazing. So what brought this on? I mean, what happened? I believe it started when you went for a little bit of a potter around the world and a travel, didn't you?
Yeah, but I went with those intentions when I left to do that. It was actually before that when I was scratching my head, looking at my day-to-day life and finding that it wasn't overly fulfilling and, wanted to find a little bit of purpose. So I just went out on my own journey and ended up somehow, through a lot of different sort of chance meetings and whatever, out on the, a little bit of time in Burma, but also on the Thai-Burma border out in the jungle. So I roughed it out there for a while and got to see a bit of a different life.
Was it really, you know, you must have been really roughing it, like it was proper.
It was. Wow. Yeah. Had to do treks because it was wet season when I was first arrived there. So no access through transport.
Yeah.
Like, you know, there's no four-wheel drive access or you couldn't get the motorbikes in there because all the rivers are too high. So it was trekking with a backpack through the jungle, which is pretty tough.
In the wet season. So humid as all hell.
Yeah. And sleeping on wooden floors and
wow, you must have been just one big mosquito bite.
Yeah, it's funny. I mustn't have particularly tasty blood because I don't get affected.
I know that's not true.
No, I don't.
Really?
Yeah, it's true.
Wow. Mm,
do you want to try some?
I don't know. I think I'll stick with maybe a pot later.
Yeah, okay. So, yeah, it was amazing. It was, I guess you could say life-changing. But just, yeah, coming back and, I mean, you know, you could take your pick anywhere in the world where to help. Because, you know, there's plenty of people out there that need it, but that's where I ended up. And our beneficiary over there, Kid Launch, runs a lot of education programs, you know, and just empowering the small communities out there because they don't really have any assistance. And, sort of creating some opportunities for them.
That is fantastic.
Yeah.
And the reason I think this is great, we wanted to get you back in and have a chat about it because Joy has been a real big help to you, hasn't it?
Joy has been incredible. In particular, Asian Pop Radio, which you got to tune into because Jason from there is just, he's incredible. He's been a huge support and it's ongoing. And yeah, we can't thank him enough. And Joy as well has been a big support. And Dean Beck as well. If you tune in, he's interviewed us a couple of times. So yeah, it's really kicked things along, you know, and it's tough and we're building it, but yeah, it's getting there.
Which leads me on to the next question. Where to next? What are the plans for the future?
So now we're just, we're doing fundraisers here. We just had one last Thursday. There'll be more upcoming fundraisers, which you can check out on they'll be posted on our website, which is echointernational.org.au. And yeah, we're doing small fundraising like that. We're getting set up with all our, you know, behind-the-scenes paperwork and doing a trip over in July to see how everything's going and, sort of create the next steps of our projects. At the moment, we've got a couple of people going to university that we've sent from the villages out there.
Fantastic. So you're actually getting people into university with the work you're doing.
Yeah, and
that's amazing.
We're fundraising for a school at the moment, which is over the border in Burma.
Yeah.
A tough little spot to get to. And we've also filled a school with computers and tables and chairs and all that sort of stuff. So lots of stuff going on. And we always want people to get involved.
And that's excellent. How can they do that?
Yeah, well, anybody can contact us through our Facebook or, like I mentioned, on the website, echointernational.org.au. So, there's plenty of ways to get in contact with us and, you know, do your own fundraisers or come for a trip with us over there. And, we really want to get people involved. We want an avenue to make it easy for anybody to get involved. I mean, we're just ordinary people and
And people do want to get involved with it. I mean, typically you talk to people, Australians are very good volunteers across the board, and they do like getting involved with these things. So you're giving them a way that you've basically done the hard work. You know, you've laid down those contacts, you're on the ground there, and you're giving them quite a convenient way, actually, to get involved.
That's right. Yeah, yeah, exactly. I mean, I hit all those brick walls when I was, before I left to go to Southeast Asia. It was a constant brick wall to try and volunteer and help. You know, you got to jump through hoops and sign this and, you know, certificate this. So yeah, if we can make a bit of a easy avenue, then, you know, that I think it's a great thing because a lot of people do want to help and it shouldn't be hard to help.
Jeremy, it is absolutely fantastic. That is just about the only excuse I would have accepted for you not being in on the show for so many months.
Really? Okay, well,
pretty
that's
much.
Lucky.
Yeah.
As far as excuses go, it's pretty, you know,
it is
watertight.
A very noble. And doesn't it just highlight how vacuous what we do for a job is? You know, we come in on the show every week, we talk about cars, everyone's swanning around the world.
I know.
If all the motor journalists drop dead overnight, no one's going to wake up worse off, are they? But
probably
Jeremy's
not.
Doing something really worthwhile.
Come on.
So absolutely get in touch. We're going to have just a very short break, but we'll be back very shortly after this. We've got a few more minutes left of the show. We're going to discuss a few other things. Namely, I was playing a tradie earlier in the week. I'll tell you a little bit more about that in a bit. But before that, Mike, I want to talk to you very briefly about you had a European trip, didn't you?
I did, and I had while I was over there, I thought it was only appropriate to drive a bunch of cars that are coming to Australia but aren't yet on sale, just so we could get an early sneak peek. And two of them that I drove were both kind of new bookmarks or new extremes of the Volkswagen Golf range. Everybody knows the Volkswagen Golf. Yeah. There's a Volkswagen Golf wagon, so there's two uses of the word wagon in one car name, which is novel. But there's two versions of said Golf wagon in Europe coming to Australia later this year. One is called the All Track and one is called the Golf R wagon. You might be able to guess what the Golf R wagon is. It's the Golf R in wagon form. So the 206 kilowatt all-wheel drive turbo performance hardcore version, just that you can put more stuff in the back of it, and it's going to cost about $2,000 more than the regular Golf R.
Yeah.
So, you know, if you're a fan of the Golf R and you want to carry stuff around, I can tell you right now, after driving that car hard, there's hardly any compromise. The fact that it's longer means that it's slightly more controllable at times and slightly less nimble at other times, but only by very, very small.
How much longer is it?
Jeremy,
I can't remember the exact figure, which is kind of shameful. I would suggest somewhere around 20 centimetres, somewhere around.
Jeremy!
There you go. Hey.
Gross. So it's only two grand for 20 centimetres.
Technically, the hatch is cut, you see, because it's a shorter version.
Couple
of grand more, probably. They haven't announced final pricing yet, but it'll be just under 60 grand.
And does it look better? Because, you know, like, typically in Audi's range, like the Avants and the wagons look
better.
That's
right.
Than
Europeans do wagons really well.
Yeah.
And the Golf wagon looks good. This one's lower. It's got bigger wheels and wider tyres, and it just looks badass. Understated, but badass. But it's the All-Track that's really interesting for me, because Australians are buying tons of SUVs now, more than they ever have before. But there's kind of like a subsection of SUVs, and it's really defined by cars like the Subaru Outback. They're not really a four-wheel drive, but they're sort of a wagon. It's a bit higher with some chunky wheel arches and sort of vague pretensions of being decent off-road. And Volkswagen's done a version of the Golf.
And it's coming here?
Golf wagon jacked up, bigger wheel arches and all-wheel drive. It is coming here in a few months' time. And it's got this really cool off-road program. Took it in some pretty hairy terrain, and it handled it beautifully.
Cool.
So, you know, I guess you've got these two new extremes to the Volkswagen Golf range. Golf All-Track, Golf R-Wagon.
Fantastic. Mm. Looking forward to it. We're going to take a very, very short break, but we'll be back after this. You're on Fender Bender on Joy 94.9. Who was that lovely voice doing the live read in there, I wonder?
It's very anonymous.
Right? Yes. It sounded familiar. It was weird. It's like we've heard that voice really recently, like only seconds before. You're on Joy 94.9. This is Fender Bender. It's a Saturday afternoon. We're talking all things cars. We've been talking international, both Jeremy's wholesome activities and Mike's...
Yeah, you gave me a hard act to follow, right? There's Jeremy over here, St. Jeremy, talking about his wonderful charity initiatives, and it's like, oh, Mike, talk about swanning around in some fast cars.
Yeah, all right, well, I'm going to trump the pair of you, because you've been in Europe, you've been in other parts of tropical world doing charitable things. I was in Adelaide.
Oh,
hello.
All right, okay. Now, this is important, though. This is what I was doing, was I was basically keeping Australia running, because I was there to drive a van.
Wow. Why did you have to go to Adelaide to drive a van?
Because, actually, that's a very good question. Because you can during the rush hour in Adelaide, you can actually still move. So we wanted to do some urban driving and some also rural driving with the new Renault Traffic. And if you tried to do that in Melbourne or Sydney, you would have just sat there listening to the radio. I would have road tested a radio in a van all day.
You could say, how does a traffic handle traffic? It writes itself down.
Oh, I like it.
Oh, very good.
Traffic is, of course, spelt with one F because they haven't learned how to spell it properly
yet.
Correct. But this is the Renault Traffic. Now, there's a critical point to this van. In the last generation, it's the third generation, we only got the last one in Australia, which had a 2-litre diesel. It did quite well, actually. It was of the Renault commercial fleet. They've got the Kangoo and they've got the Master, which sit either side, small and large. Traffic is the midsize. It was actually the best-selling commercial vehicle they sell to quite a large proportion. So they really want this one to do well also. When it's come back, it's got a smaller engine. It's gone to 1.6 litres, but it's gained 2 turbos. So it's now actually more powerful than the last 2-litre diesel, but way more efficient. It'll do 6.2 litres per 100 kilometres, which is pretty good for any car, let alone a van.
There's those European emissions regulations coming into play.
Absolutely right.
EU6 is so strict on any emissions. You've got to have small engines with turbos now. It's
precisely.
Just de rigueur.
However, now there is a thing. Now the car is very good all round. The van, I should say, it's a great drive. That engine is really spectacular. It does incredibly well. It's like sort of, I think it's 400 newton meters it puts out, which is 360 newton meters, which is pretty good for a 1.6. But
is the letdown the gearbox?
Yes, yeah. It is.
It always has been. Because I used to work with Renault.
Yeah. Well, hang on. You were on the money, but not. You don't know how good you were, Jeremy. When I say the gearbox is the letdown, I mean it's only available as a manual.
Ah.
Yes. Now the last traffic.
That's
was,
a good thing.
Well, it is for us.
It is for us, and the automated Renault gearboxes.
They were bad. They didn't get them right.
Yeah, but Australians don't buy manuals.
That's right.
So while we like manuals and Europeans love manuals, as all the Europeans drive these even today in auto world, Australians don't really buy them very much. So it's going to be a bit of a hard sell for poor old Renault.
Now, in the last version, the second generation Traffic, they actually said that Renault says they sold 60% in manual. So it's actually not the end of the world. But I asked, I said, so does that mean you're forfeiting 40% of the sales because you're not going to be able to offer an auto? And they said no, because that engine is so good. This is quite a lot. I like this answer. They said, because the engine is so versatile, you don't need an automatic.
They would say that, wouldn't they?
I was like, hang on. So what, you just put it in one gear and drive around like that? And they pretty much said that. They said third gear will do pretty much everything. I said, you can't do that. It's got six gears. Yeah. I'm not going to just drive and around in one.
Yeah, the whole reason people don't like manuals is in peak hour, they're on and off the clutch.
Exactly,
right?
Yeah.
So it doesn't, even if you are cruising around in third, you still have to do that.
That's right. So they tried to tell me, no, you
rubbish.
Don't need an auto because...
Rubbish.
Now, look, they are considering an auto back in France.
Hopefully a standard automatic because the gearbox they had beforehand was just terrible.
I agree. I had a bit of experience with that. But the interesting part of all this is Renault is the van supplier for Australia Post.
All right.
Renault has been making massive input into its commercial range to boost sales here, and it's Europe's biggest van maker by a hell of a long way, and it is trying to beat Toyota and Hyundai here. Well, not beat them, but catch up to them here.
Yeah.
And it now is the exclusive van supplier to Australia Post, at least in the metropolitan areas. The question is, if they want to give Australia Post a traffic van, I think Australia Post generally likes automatic vans because, you know, if you're stopping and starting constantly, it's a good bet. So is this going to hurt them in that area?
Quite possibly. Mm. And the other good thing about autos is that they're very good for rental companies and big fleets have lots of different drivers jumping in all the time. So
I mean, you never know. There's lots of people who can't drive manuals.
Precisely.
And don't have manual licenses.
The thing that will save it, I would say, is it's got some very good little features, you know, genuinely useful to a day-to-day driver. Like the center seat's got three seats in the front. Center seat folds down and has like a little bench that you can put your laptop on. It's also got a clipboard holder that holds it at a special angle so the driver can see it. It's got an iPad mount on the dash. It's got a phone mount on the dash. It's got all these clever little features. And my favourite one of all is it's got a flap. There you go, I said it. That opens up and allows storage from the load area underneath the passenger seat. So if you've got a very long one, it can go...
I've never heard a long load.
Yeah, from
is
the...
Is that time-wise or length-wise?
This is just turning way somewhere I didn't want it to.
Anyway,
what are we
talking about? Your compartment?
Doesn't really matter. I think we'll finish it there, shall we? It's a great bit of kit, but we'll have to see whether the consumer will speak with their feet and not buy the
Renault Long Load.
That's a way better name.
Really
look,
good.
Guys, we are very nearly out of time, but I wanted to finish with one of my infamous rants. And I feel I'm going to have to punctuate it with one of these.
You are listening to Fender Bender on Joy 94.9.
See what I mean? I've got all the power here. I can do stuff like that, you know? I've got all the buttons. Now, listen, is anyone familiar with a computer game called Gran Turismo?
Yes.
Yeah, right. I love that game, but it's actually had an effect on the automotive world that is really annoying, and I'm going to explain now. When the sixth generation of Gran Turismo was created, the makers of the game, Polyphony Digital, they asked all the manufacturers of the world to come forward with these concepts that they enter into a competition or a club called Vision GT. And what they would do is that if the car makers submitted these concepts, the game would turn them into a real car you could use. I use the word real in inverted commas. That you can then drive in the game. Now, that sounds like great, doesn't it? It's really good for the game, but what it means has happened is that these manufacturers, all of them, have now started teasing these concepts like they're going to be new cars.
I saw one during the week. Is there some Peugeot thing that...
Yes.
It goes 0 to 100 in 1.7 seconds.
Yes.
Where is it? What does it look like? Oh, it's just a video game car.
But they build it up. They build it up over the weeks following.
It's pixels. Like it's not a real thing.
Yes.
It's making me mad now.
But we keep getting these press releases out of these teaser images like it's going to be an amazing new Peugeot and then it just turns out to be a game. So to date... Get this, to date, Mercedes, BMW, Mitsubishi, Mini, Subaru, Chevrolet, Volkswagen, Nissan, Aston Martin, Toyota, Infiniti, and Mazda, and Lexus have all showcased these concepts, and it's not stopping there.
And who's made any, has any company actually made their car?
Not
even
one.
Even as a concept, like a physical concept car?
Not one has actually turned into a car that can drive under its own power. And it's set to go on, because if you go on the website for the game, you can actually go down to the Vision GT section, and behind closed doors, there is an Audi, Honda, Hyundai, Lamborghini, SRT, Tesla, Daihatsu, Ford, General Motors, and style houses Gregario, Zagato, Bertone, and even Nike. Even shoes are in on the game.
Did you say Daihatsu?
Yes!
What the hell is Daihatsu going to do?
I know, it's absolutely ridiculous. These cars are all coming. So what that means is in the coming months, we're going to have to put up with these nauseating teaser campaigns from all of those companies I just listed for cars that won't even happen. They're not even real.
And the responsibility is on us as automotive writers
definitely
to not cover it.
Yes. Well, in fact, the last story I wrote about it, I did pretty much say, look, we're expecting all these other manufacturers to come up with their so-called concepts. And I said, don't be surprised if we don't write about them. Because it's just infuriating.
Good call.
Yeah, okay. Well, I'm glad you agree with me. But look, they've been doing it for months, and it has got to a point where I hope that it does some of these styling trends that they've come up with. Hopefully they do filter down. They wouldn't put all that work into... Well, I say put all that work. It's probably some spotty 15-year-old who's on work experience. They just sit him in the corner and say, come up with a sketch and it will go in a game. Maybe that's all it is.
I don't know. I haven't got anything to say about that.
Jeremy?
Didn't even know it existed.
All right, then. Well, we'll
like
just
I know about Gran Turismo when I was 15 and spotty.
Yeah, okay. Aw, there's a cute thought.
Oh, thank you.
And with that lovely image, I think we're probably going to have to leave it there. Until next week, I'm going to leave everyone, listeners, dear listeners, thank you so much for listening with Jeremy's image as a spotty 15-year-old. We hope you come back very soon, Jeremy.
Yeah, me too. Thanks for having me.
It's been an absolute pleasure. Great to see you. And keep up the fantastic work. Once again, how can people find out about your...
Echointernational.org.au.
Superb. And Mike, you also keep up your good work.
Yes, my... extremely giving work.
And I will also try and do the same thing. But next week it will be the lovely Tim Nicholson back to take the helm again. We have coming up next another fabulous show. It's Technogaze with Michael, Mark and Rena. And until next week, with loads more from the Fender Bender team on Joy 94.9, please do drive safely.
This has been a Fender Bender podcast for Joy 94.9, Australia's first and only gay and lesbian radio station. See joy.org.au for more details.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast, brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.